and welcome to Weed Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and with me today is your typical Brooklyn tack head. It's Joel.
Wait, what am I? Typical what?
A typical typical Brooklyn tack head.
Tack head? I don't even know what that means.
Tack head or tack head?
I thought she called Jamie a tack head in the movie at some point.
Okay.
Wait.
Jamie's the tack.
I think someone called someone that.
Maybe it's a 1986 expression, like solely in that year.
Wait, are you saying tack head, pack head, or dick head?
I think maybe Greer was calling someone a typical Brooklyn tack head, because Greer lives in Manhattan.
Right, and Greer would say something that doesn't make any sense, like tack head.
Yeah, because it maybe was a popular expression for a weekend.
Or it could be some weird, made-up Spike Lee nonsense.
Me? Anyway. Tackhead? You talking about me? You calling me a tackhead? Okay, so that's my Mars impersonation.
Head full of tacks?
Ask the question like six times.
Anyway, so this is the first half of the 1986 pairing, which is She's Gonna Have It and Platoon. This half is She's Gonna Have It, the Spike Lee classic. I guess you'd call it a classic movie by this point, maybe.
It's a classic. Why isn't it a classic?
I don't know. I don't know who determines these things.
Oh, I do.
Okay, so yeah, it's a Spike's debut film, and returning from the Five Bloods episode and Burial of Kodjo is Jared Gilman.
Hello. I apologize. I spoke before I got introduced.
It's fine.
Yeah, we don't have rules like that. I always think that's weird when the host like makes them like wait until they're introduced.
I didn't know. Well, I never knew if that's like an explicit rule or just sort of like common courtesy. Like just sort of like the general like what I don't know. The stigma of guesting on a podcast, but I guess I'm just, I don't know. I
appreciate your caution
in front of my computer. Yeah. It's kind of a habit. So had you guys seen it before or?
What? I started watching it maybe like a year ago or so, and I was like, we're going to cover this eventually. So I'd rather watch it then, because I had to I can't remember why I stopped, but I did stop. Mm. And I've seen some of the series.
It was too sexual for you.
Mm. Yeah, I'm a real prude, as you know.
He's the one who watches the pinky violence movies, not just, you know.
Yep, sex is disgusting. I don't want to see it on screen.
Yeah, I watched it almost exactly a year ago, like January of last year, because when we were prepping to do all the episodes for the podcast, I was just kind of like watching the Spike Lees that I hadn't watched. And I didn't make it very far, but I really enjoyed watching it that time, and I enjoyed watching it this time. What about you?
I watched it for the first time 2 days ago, yesterday? A couple days ago. I enjoyed it. I think, you know, knowing that it's like it was his first feature, I think helps, you know, it was good. Just that, I guess, you know, because it's like all about relationships. You can't just sit there watching it like, why are you guys together right now? for a good minute, you know. But I think that's kind of the you know, that's not something that's a reaction that's like out of the question, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you guys think?
I guess I'll start with I like this movie. It's I don't like it as much as, if we're ranking like the early Spike, this is probably towards the bottom of the early, of like early, up until like Malcolm X, but that's not a bad thing, because like the, that's,
yeah, I still haven't seen Malcolm X yet.
Yeah, but like it's it feels like I saw some people say on Letterboxd it's like his take on a Woody Allen movie, which is like I kind of see that, but it also is I found it more interesting than like Manhattan personally.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's very, I will say, like, I like how he always, how he keeps it kind of stylistically unpredictable throughout, or, in the, you know, if you're watching it for the first time, and, again, you're unfamiliar with, like, his sort of style or his...
And it feels like Manhattan, feel like Manhattan, but with energy to it.
Yeah.
Which...
slightly different, a little like different structurally than Manhattan, I guess, because it's not, you know, it's not done in like a mockumentary, kind pseudo mockumentary style, I guess. I don't know if mockumentary might not be the right word, but like where the character, you know, where like, you know, the characters are like talking to the camera, directly addressing the camera and all that.
Right, like a film's being made.
And so I think, yeah, on that, you know, on that front, it's a lot more fun than like Manhattan, where that's more of like a traditional. You're just sort of watching, you know, the characters go through. If I'm remembering it correctly, I think, right? Annie Hall is like the one where he's breaking the fourth wall constantly and sort of.
I've only seen Manhattan, and I found it boring at the time. So.
I watched it a few years ago. The summer before my freshman year, I watched it. Admittedly, I think I was sort of prepping for a movie, but I was watching it more for like the cinematography and the the directing in that sense. But I think with the context of Woody Allen's real life history, it's kind of a, you know, it's what it is.
Yeah.
That movie.
Yeah, that movie.
It's really beautifully shot, but it's very, very. It's uncomfortable.
A little bit.
Plot wise. But yeah, She's Gotta Have It. A lot fun. A lot more fun, for sure. Also, just, you know, it's like. Got that, like, young film student energy where. You know, there are like certain like references or sort of fun jokes in that regard, like Jamie leaning over to Nora and being like, "Tap your," doing the ruby shoes line from Wizard of Oz, and then it cuts, and then the next scene's in like beautiful Technicolor or whatever. Like, you know, stuff like that. I thought was like a lot. You know, it was fun.
Yeah, and like that got me thinking. Like Spike was doing like a musical number or something musical like that for I think up until of this phase of his career, like up until like Malcolm X, there's like a musical, like a musical, a number type scene in all the movies except for maybe Jungle Fever.
Yeah, I was gonna say Jungle Fever doesn't have anything like that, right? Yeah. I would say this is better than Jungle Fever, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, okay. Definitely the Jungle Fever, they should have swapped the B story and A story, and it would have been, I think, much better.
Sure.
All right, so where do you guys want to start with this?
Let's talk about like, the TV series. No, I'm just kidding. What do you mean? Where do we want to start? Start at the beginning.
Okay.
You're like about the, regarding the movie. You mean?
Yeah.
What do you guys think of? Spike Lee's acting part.
I have no problem with Spike Lee as an actor. I know people do, and I've heard even on this podcast say things like sometimes I think he is kind of a little bit too much concerned with like getting out the lines instead of being a character, but like I don't I really don't have a problem with him as an actor.
Yeah, no, me neither. I thought like I had fun with him in this movie for sure.
For me,
it's like watching him kind of just like play that character, especially the opening when he like crashes into the camera. That was great.
Yeah, it depends on the movie. Like in Girl 6, it's like, I don't need him in this movie. Put a real actor in that part. But in this movie, it's like, it fits, it works. Like, I don't mind it here.
Yeah. Although, what I will say, I thought it was, again, going back to the beginning, the way they introduce the three boyfriends, it's like funny, he gives himself kind of the nicest view in his portrait shot.
Oh, yeah.
With the bridge in the background. I feel like everyone else, I just don't remember anyone else's, you know, the shots themselves, I guess, in that regard.
I believe Greer was parking his car in his, like, townhouse, or, it looked like he owned a home in Manhattan, and, like, and it's from his car, not of, like, the car at an angle, and it's like, oh, this guy has money. And I think Jamie is just, he's sitting on a bench in...
Oh, well, yeah. Like, it's Greer's in the car and Jamie's on the bench, and then, Mars has a... what is it, the Brooklyn Bridge? One of the bridges? I'm not good with bridges, but...
I would not know. I live in New York maybe 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
And most time I stay in Brooklyn because that's where my friends are. I have one friend in Manhattan. I think he lives in Manhattan. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Anyway, so I like the watching this movie because I feel like I'm gonna say this a lot, but I see the blueprint of everything that's gonna come.
Oh yeah, I bet.
This thing's like the photo montage of like showing Brooklyn in 1986, of like you see like kids and babies, and you see like adults, and just like a nice like literal snapshot of what of the setting, and like you get this nice like jazz music by his dad Bill Lee, over it, and it's like, oh, this is just like he's like. It's a perfect way to set up, like, what you're going to see. This term's like, this is a place and a time. And it's really setting it. Setting it in a specific place and time, but I think that's a good thing in this case.
Mm-hmm. I'd say the only thing missing, like, from what comes in every other movie is that he doesn't really have any political message in this, like... You know, sexual politics aside, I mean, he doesn't really talk about being black in, you know, living where they were living or anything like that. And like School Days is so political about that kind of stuff. It's like, he was like, okay, now that people know I can make a movie, I'm going to make a movie about what I really want to talk about or something like that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And School Days gets more to like this is like the most character piece he ever gets, because even like The Sweet Blood Jesus gets into like talking about class and race within class, and like and this is like the most, it's like it just happens to be a black story in Brooklyn in 1986.
Yeah, and this has a little bit to do with with the Greer versus Mars kind of thing, like Mars having to hustle to make money and stuff like that. Greer assuming he was cheap and a thief or whatever, and only rich people fold their clothes before having sex. I can confirm this.
that was a great moment.
Yeah, that's funny.
I don't get Lola.
Lola?
Like, it seems like, because of the title, she's got to have it, right?
Oh, Nola.
No, Nola, I'm sorry, Lola. Not Lola. Nola.
Oh, okay, no,
Lola,
yeah.
Lola,
okay.
Lola, yeah. Bunny. We're talking about Space Jam, aren't we?
No, okay, I was confused for a second. I thought you were talking about the lesbian character. I was going to say that her name's Opal.
Yeah, Opal. Nola Darling, a.k.a. Sister Nola in the movie Red Hook Summer.
Huh.
I don't,
Wait, does I never saw. I haven't seen that movie, but is that like where you, like actually like does she come back as like a character?
She's not a character. In fact, I don't think she has any speaking lines. But the actress in it is in it, and her character is Sister Nola.
Huh. So that has to be a reference.
Red Hook Summer is the axis point in which Spike Lee's universe meets.
Yeah, huh. it confirms that that vampires exist and do the right thing. Mm.
Yeah.
But that's a story for another day. Yeah. It gets complex.
Anyway, you were saying that all three of these people are her boyfriends, and like I don't know how that can happen.
Yeah.
Like like their personalities are in such a like I guess you have to be a very tolerant person, but like the way Greer acts.
Yeah, I that was maybe I probably shouldn't call them her boyfriends. That was maybe a too forward of a term, but but yeah, they're like her potential suitors, I guess. Is maybe a better way to say it.
Yeah, like she hangs out. It's not like she just sleeps with him. She also hangs out with him, spends time with him, extracurricular wise or whatever, and their personalities are so different. It's like I don't have friends that whose personalities are that much different. I probably have friends that I wouldn't be able to hang out with the same time as a different friend, because there might be some clashing, but not so much as like
I feel like I know a bunch of. I feel like I've I guess been lucky enough to at least sort of gotten to know a bunch of people who I think probably wouldn't.
Well, you're in college right now, right?
Would have some interesting. You're surrounded. Yeah. Well, I mean, not this.
I don't leave the house.
But yeah.
That's it. That's right. I just wanted to say I don't leave the house. That's the end of the statement. No, I don't. I don't know. But
sure. But I see what you get. I mean, like I understand what you're saying, though. It's like you're right. It's like a very disparate like group of personality wise, like a group of people that she seems to be, you know,
able to get along with for the most part, although.
Yeah, and also,
But, Joel, did you notice that Jamie Overstreet is the actor is also in Daughters of the Dust?
I mean, I saw that was also in his credits, but I don't remember.
I believe he's I don't think he's the main husband character, but I think he's, like, one of the other husbands. Like, I think there's like a tall. There's a nose like one who, he's not the short one who tries to, like, fight the other one later on.
Yeah, he was Mr.
Am Smee. I misremembering? Daughters of the Dust, isn't that when the people living on that gullah like are being forced to leave?
Yeah, and they're. It's mostly women, but there are a couple men, like their husbands.
Yeah, a couple male characters.
I remember the one guy who was like, I don't know if he was, I can't remember. I just remember one guy speaking in the patois or whatever that they have, but I don't remember any other men, and I remember a lot of chickens.
Yeah, there are a lot.
Yeah, chickens, memorable chickens.
Okay, but who was it? So since you're talking about Mars, the Mars character, do you think in the series it's Anthony Ramos is better than Spike in the role?
Hey, how does it compare to the series?
The series, yeah, the first season actually follows the plot, but it's got, you know, because they expanded the episodes, it like has extra stories and characters going on, but it does follow it. Pretty good.
Stylistically, is it like more is it the sort of the same idea? Are the characters like being interviewed by an unseen filmmaker, or is it more sometimes. Like
I think it's I don't remember the men. I remember Nola talking to the camera a lot.
Oh. The men are more fleshed out, because I think Jamie has a wife and a kid.
Mm-hmm.
or maybe Greer has a wife and a kid. And there's a whole subplot of like his kid.
Yeah.
And at like some private school. It must be Greer because it's a rich kid school.
And anyway, the Mars character is because he's multi-ethnic, like they get into the other side of his race and stuff like that, like his family.
Yeah, and he's played by Anthony Ramos, who was in Hamilton in the original cast.
Oh, who'd he play? Hmm. The Bullet? The Bullet that shot Hamilton.
I'm going to stop myself before I say anything that will make people angry, but let's move on from that.
What?
We're not here to talk about Hamilton. We're here to talk about She's Out of Habit. Right. But
I recommend that first season. I haven't seen the second season. It's already been canceled. Like, once it got canceled, that, you know, that for some reason that just makes me go like, oh, I cannot get to watch it. I might get disappointed.
Hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's the unfortunate thing with TV.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the big question with this movie: is this a good portrayal of women in like in the female sexuality, or do you think it's misguided?
We're all men.
Yes, I know. But
I hate to assume anyone else's gender on the podcast, but I am at least a straight half white male.
Yeah. I don't really know how to answer.
Did it strike?
Yes.
I feel like I'd need to read more criticism on that aspect of the film before I sort of, I don't know, like, just because, like, yes, I'm a man. B, I don't have a lot of relationship experience, so, like, I just don't have, like, I just don't feel like I know, I can judge things that way, okay. At least.
Spencer, what confident. Do you think?
I don't know.
I don't think it's as bad as Spike's, like, judginess towards sex and, like, how he portrays women.
Well, I mean, like, what I'll say is, like, sorry for interrupting. What did you think of the rape? What do you think of that in terms of like the betrayal and like the way that it was handled?
The fact that they even acknowledge that it's rape, because it happens and it's forceful sex, and they could have just said it was like really aggressive sex, but she calls it rape and they acknowledge it. So I appreciate that, but I have to say, like, when it comes to, like, whether it's a good female character or not, we don't really get to know Nola. Other than she...
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, we don't know her outside of, like, the... Well, outside of, you know, she's an only child. Artist.
And
Yeah, artist.
She likes having sex when she feels like it, which is okay.
Yeah.
She doesn't want a boyfriend.
Yeah.
And she wants five rusty butt boys later on.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, if anything, like, yeah, the film never feels judgmental, towards any of the characters, at least it's like, it, you know, I guess, again, because of the choice of doing it in the sort of, again, somewhat mockumentary format, it allows me to kind of, like, take a step back, you know, in terms of, like, in terms of watching it, trying to figure out what it's sort of morally trying to say, So, I feel like on that front, it's...
It's a criticism on Nola, which I don't think it is, or if it is, I don't see it that way, because all I could think is if these men aren't getting what they want from her, which is a commitment or something like that, then that's on mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
She seems to have painted herself as somebody who was not looking for a commitment.
And it's like she's pretty honest throughout, like, and you know, or at least she isn't like, I don't know, it's not like she's written to be manipulative or whatever like that. It's very much just these guys sort of, you know, the way it's presented, it's you know, even Jamie, the quote unquote one that you're maybe rooting for, maybe, but you know, the first scene he's like following her for an extended while, and it's, you know, I guess maybe back then, before, you know,
before I can't say if that
kind of well, no, but like if that kind of action would be seen as like a more romantic thing than it is now, which, you know, now that's like weird.
Yeah.
You know. So like that, I guess that's also kind of.
I like it when people talk about like the context of like why certain things aren't movie because or not aren't weird in movies because of like the time period they came out. Like oh, that child went on an adventure by itself. Well, that's because that was before the invention of child molesters, and they could go on an hour and a half long adventure. No.
Yeah, like my neighbor told her, it's like, oh, these kids are going out on their own for kind of a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
But the magical world, so it's
children safe. Never accidentally fall and hit their head on a rock, so it's fine. Let them explore.
Yeah, they can heal. Well, their children.
Not if it's in the river.
Yeah. But I was saying, it's not. I would have liked more from Nola's, like, more from Nola than, like, people talking about her. But it's also not as bad as it could have gone. Because, like, we've seen other movies that Spike has made where it's, like, way more judgy and, like, borderline or flat-out misogynistic. And just, like, it's like, what are you trying to say here? And here's, like, it just feels organic. And like he's just trying to just make like a cool hip, you know, indie movie.
Sure.
And this was an independent movie too. This wasn't like I think School Days would have been his first studio picture. Which of the three suitors did you guys like the most?
I'll pass.
You'll pass.
Opal seemed all right.
Yeah, Opal. Yeah, we'll take Opal. Maybe she can just move in with Zhua Li. Like, so I think I've been mispronouncing her name this entire time. Spike Lee's sister.
Yeah, that's why I always said Spike Lee's sister every Zhua. Time.
That she.
Which must be. Mm. Must be like a French thing.
Joie de vie. Or whatever. I don't like any, like, I guess Jamie, but he's got some shit he needs to work out, but no, but Mars at least. See, like, if I had to choose from the one from the TV show, Mars actually seems like the most
fun?
Not fun, but like the least corrupted in some way. Like, he's still got this kind of like fun, joyful innocence to him, and in here Mars is like a hustler, you know. He's like, I saw a hot chick, so I hit her up, and you know, but I'm still doing all my things. And like when she was like busy, you know, on her birthday sleeping Jamie, Mars is like calls up the next lady, oh yeah, I've been thinking about you. Like Mars has always got a plan ready to go, so not this version.
Yeah.
And Greer, I not even. If you weren't so hot, yeah, I would have left you, you know, or whatever he says. Like, fuck you, Greer.
He said, the moment you get fat, I'm going to leave you.
Thanks. As they're eating.
Right.
He's eating goddamn red meat. he's gonna complain about her possibly getting fit.
Or no, he's doing push-ups, and he says that, I think.
Because she's working on her art.
Yeah.
She should be working on her.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I like Mars. He's he's fun. He's kind of a goofball. He's not as irritating as Greer. And Jamie goes between being, like, kind of, like, annoyingly, romantic. And it's like, okay, tone it down. Like, you're a person. He seems the most unrealistic of the three when it comes to like what he wants out of this.
Maybe,
but,
maybe he's one of those cat kids.
Yeah, maybe. But when Nola's decision to go to be celibate.
To what?
She says she's not going to have sex for a while.
At the very end, but she doesn't.
Yeah, it's an.
She does that basically to get Jamie to make a decision right then and there. That's.
So, do you think that was just a tactic, or do you think she's being serious?
I don't know, because you see what she says at the end. She's like, I don't know what I was thinking about that Jamie thing. That was a mistake. So I think it was just. It makes her look very wishy-washy at the end, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's fair to the character.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. I saw that decision more as her reaction to I guess what had happened previously, but yeah, I was more, I guess, thinking like, why doesn't she just dump all of them? Mm. I don't know. I'm.
You're like, give me your number, Nola. Would you guys like to hear the definition of tackhead?
Sure.
Sure.
This is a word often used to describe an individual, more specifically a lower-income female from the inner city, that is loud, tacky, boisterous, and not used to the finer things in life.
Okay, so that was Greer who said it.
So, good movie.
I'm just tired and my brain is fried from preparing for files, so I'll get back.
It's okay, dude.
I know. I'll get back on it.
So, do we want to talk about Platoon at all? Because I will admit, I did just watch it for the first time like a couple hours ago.
I want to get to a couple things first.
Okay.
Okay. So, Opal, do you think? Okay, Joel. This is a better question for you. Is Opal a like was that an offensive portrayal of a lesbian, or do you think it was just fine?
Oh, as a lesbian, is that why you think I have the authority?
No, because we've covered Spike and lesbians. It has shown up multiple times.
This is the most gentle portrayal of a lesbian that he's done, but it also is at the end when she like tries to kiss Nola after Nola's being like no and stuff like that, it's not a positive portrayal, so it goes along.
Right, yeah.
It only gets worse.
I don't
here.
Think he understands what a lesbian is. You just watch She Hate Me.
Are his lesbian characters like
they're
stereotypical and like very
they're
like
cartoonish in like the worst not the worst ways, this in ways like
and like a way where like you can tell like, oh, you were just writing this character from the sort of stigmas that you know, rather than like writing a person
right
happens to
exactly
that or like his fetish in some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you, I mean, do yourself a favor and watch She Hate Me, and you'll learn all you need to know about what lesbians
yeah,
be
I haven't
like.
Seen that one yet.
And they like apparently big dicks, even though they're lesbians.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that almost feels like it is before people found out bisexuality existed, even though it's always existed. Spike was like, no, no, no.
Yeah, but,
yeah, a lot of people got that one wrong.
Yeah, but, I don't know, like, the summer of this movie, like, there are so many, like, moments and certain lines. It's like, oh, this shows up again. Like, there's a part where there's a nightmare where, like, the three women come in and they say, like, all the good men are in prison or homos. Mm-hmm. That shows up again in Jungle Fever, that, like, exact line. It's just, like, it's like, I can't not see just the rest of his career, and it's hard to look at this movie by itself.
Like on its own, yeah, in that kind of regard.
Yeah, this on its own.
Yeah, I guess I'll admit, I guess that's sort of maybe... I didn't necessarily have that, just because, again, I'm far, far behind on his filmography. Much more so than you guys, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
it's a shame that he, you know, in terms of his ability to write those kinds of characters, it's, you know, that it's not like he got better from there.
Yeah, like, it's amazing watching this, because some things he gets better, some things it's like, how do you get worse after 30, 40 years?
Because, like, I'll admit, at first I thought it was, like, I guess, in with regards to certain moments, I was maybe more willing to brush it off, as you know, because he maybe in the sense that, like, maybe he's just thinking about the characters in this film, and he just is, this is how he's writing it, not that it comes from, like, oh, this is just how he sees the world kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, that's a minor shame.
Oh, and another thing that repeats is someone reads a letter and it cuts to a different voice reading the same letter. That shows up a lot. And you don't get, like, the spike cam yet, but you get
no, yeah, there wasn't that shot.
You get an early version of it, though. I feel like when she's walking towards the camera at the end from Jamie, like, it's like the precursor to, like, the dolly thing he was mm-hmm. going to do.
Yeah, the closest shot I could think of is just the... I think there's, like, a brief shot after the dance of the two of them clapping, and it's, like, a dolly push forward, but, like, that's not really the same thing.
Yeah. And, and, like, there's just some interesting, like, what's the right word? Juxtapositions thrown here. Like, the biggest one was when... I didn't write down what Greer was doing, but, like, you get these tribal African drums over Greer, which is, like, completely goes against, because Greer's, like, he's the upper-class rich one, and, like, you have, like, these native drums playing on a score as he's, like, I think he's, like, taking off his clothes, so it's just really, a very pointed look at, like, Jesus, my brain is not working today. But, like,
it's fine. It happens.
He's clearly trying to say something there with, like, the tribal drums, and he's, like, the wealthy upper class one. And it's also just, like, this, like, funny little detail. Like, once I noticed it, like, it made it seem, like, that much better.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting down. Yeah. He's gonna get down and dirty with this woman, you know, that's very primal, right?
Yeah, but then you don't get the drums with the other two. You just get, like,
yeah, because they had very chaste, you know, they had to, there was a hole, a sheet with a hole in the middle, and
yeah, and the musical number is great.
Yep.
Not much else to say besides I didn't expect to have, like, a color sequence. And
Yeah.
Man, it's great. And John Borman, one of my favorite directors, he had a. His first few movies were in black and white, and he always talks about if you're a director, you should make at least your first few things, even if there's like shorts in black and white, so you can understand how to make a shot look good. And then then you do use color, and this is a perfect example of like, oh, this is like once he uses color for the first time, this is like, oh, he understands like how to frame a shot. And it's mm-hmm. Ernest Dickerson was his cinematographer,
the DP. At NYU there's a class where the whole idea is that you go out and just sort of make short 1 to 5 minute long films with a crew of 3 other people, but like the first few that you do have to be in black and white and completely silent without any music or sound or dialogue. And then the last couple films you do are color is allowed, but it's like optional. And it's very much that same kind of like idea of like trying to make you, you know, shoot in black and white first so you can kind of pay more attention to composition and lighting before you then move on to color, because, you know, color, it's like focusing on those things but also adding color, so there's another layer of decision making that has to happen if, you know, you want to do, you know, something like that where you know you are, where it's a lot more, you know, meticulous and planned out.
Yeah. And there's I'm always surprised by young Spike Lee because I always forget how scrawny he is. And like he looks like Kermit when like little bike shorts, and it's like he looks like a human Muppet.
I don't understand. He looks that scrawny now too. I mean, what's the difference between young Spike Lee and current Spike Lee?
Well, you don't see him in his own movies now wearing like shorts. Like when you see his legs, it's like, oh, he looked like a Muppet.
Right. He's just a human. He's just a. He's just put together like a scarecrow. That's all.
I'm sure. But yeah, that's kind of the. Oh, okay. So, do you think Spike also had put himself in the movie so he could do the sex scene? Because you see him suck on her nipple.
Well, sorry. What was the full question?
Do you think Spike put himself in the movie so he can do the sex scene?
Because no.
You see him suck on her nipple.
Gonna say no.
Okay.
You can probably suck on her nipple if he wanted to. He doesn't have to make a movie.
He has a big ego. I feel like some of it was like, of course you give yourself like a graphic.
I mean, I feel like if that was the case, he would have cast himself as the boyfriend that gets the girl at the end, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Like if it was like, that's maybe I could be wrong with that.
He's got a belly and a nipple fetish because he does that kind of stuff and Do the Right Thing, doesn't he?
Yeah, but it's almost the same shot. Same, huh?
It was
almost
just a warm up.
Exact same shot. Yeah. And he, you know, he gets to wear her panties on his head. That's some of it's like, huh, this is an interesting choice for the director to put himself in.
Leave him alone. He likes Japanese animation.
Okay.
That's why he's putting panties on his head.
Okay. But this is on. I don't have much else to say. It's hard to pay attention because I'm trying to. It's on Netflix. And it's on DVD, I guess. But, you know, it's out there. It's easy to find. But Platoon is a companion piece, which we recorded already. But, Jared, you said you...
Oh, wait, you already recorded your piece on Platoon?
Yeah, our episode on it already. But we didn't talk about...
Okay.
She's got a habit on that one, so...
Okay.
You said you had never...
I did.
Oh.
I'd never seen Platoon, but I just watched it a couple hours ago because I thought we were going to talk about it. It was really good. I mean, you know, you walk out of the movie hating, hating America, but you know, that's also just like every day at this point. So, I thought it was
Yeah.
intense. I guess the narration part of it, I could see maybe it rubbing people the wrong way or just sort of like making it feel very obvious and sort of the message that it's trying to bring across, but like I don't know. I thought it worked. I thought it because because it's framed as his letter, the letters that I guess he wrote, and so on that front, I was invested. Although I guess maybe the end, I the look on his face kind of says everything. But what do you guys think? Because I'm.
Well, first, Joel, is there any comparison between Platoon and She's Gonna Have It?
Sure.
Oh, I didn't compare it, but.
It's fine. I could not figure out a comparison.
Well, I like that they're both like independent movies. Like, sure, Platoon has a much bigger budget, with the wartime effects and everything like that, but it's like. It does feel very much Oliver Stone's vision. Like, if you were going to point towards auteur movies, you'd probably get one right there, if you believe in that kind of stuff. Same thing with this one. Like, it is wholeheartedly a Spike Lee movie. Like, yeah, he kind of has some things that remind you of Woody Allen and stuff like that. And it's like he said as much as being influenced with that and being friends with the guy. But I feel like they have a spirit that is similar, not plot wise or anything like that. Although, isn't there a part where Nola is smoking crack and she like puts a gun into Mars's mouth and says, "Suck on that." Oh, okay,
No.
sorry. That was just Willem Dafoe. What if Willem Dafoe was one of the boyfriends?
It would have been a lot sexier.
Oh, you've been corrupted.
Mean, after that scene in Platoon, where he's like, "Put your mouth on it," it's like, and he's like talking about feeling good and smoking weed. It's
Yes,
like,
sir.
yeah. I looked up the I, for a second. I thought Dafoe was in Moonrise Kingdom, and I misremembered.
Wait, who?
I thought Dafoe was in Moonrise Kingdom for a second, but then I was like, "Oh no, that's like the one he's not in."
What the hell is Moonrise
But
Kingdom?
Yeah,
Just kidding.
it's a movie.
On the cast, which we didn't bring up on that episode, which comes out afterwards, is Corey Glover is there a Guy Francis who I believe is the one who has like the lying about getting high before before it ends. And he's a singer from In Living Color, which I didn't understand why I did not make that connection until just now.
Yeah.
And other bands too, but that's kind of like his most famous thing.
and
He's in
I
that?
don't know, isn't there's somebody in Living Color and Bamboozled, isn't there, like seven of them?
The Tommy Davidson
David Alan
and
Grier.
no, the other one of the Wayans, Damon
Oh
Wayans
yeah, that's right.
Senior.
Why was
Yeah.
I thinking David Alan Grier? I'm drunk. I'm
I
not
think
really
he might
drunk.
be. Yeah. I think it might be
It's
him.
okay. It's fine. It's a pandemic.
Yeah. But I don't know. You kind of said all the connections between the two movies. I can't really think of
Sure.
anything.
This movie had
But
just as many black actors as Platoon had.
Sure. But so with Platoon, geez, why is my brain not working?
Take a breath.
Between the two movies, which do you guys like more, Platoon or She's Gotta Have It?
Jared, you can take that one. And remember, the government is listening. No.
I can't really say. I mean, because they're two. I guess because they're two completely different movies, going for two completely different feelings, tones. I mean, I think they're both, in terms of like what they set out to do and their ability to do that, I think they're both pretty successful. I mean, you know, I guess in terms of my just sort of dumb moments and moment biases, if I'm flipping through channels and I see the two on, I'm probably going to go for the war movie. Just because I tend to, sure. I don't know.
You don't have to explain any further than that, yeah.
I'm just, I guess in terms of just like... what I'm in the mood for nowadays, maybe it just, I'd rather watch lots of awful action as opposed to relationship stuff. I don't know. But I mean, even, they're still both great films. All right. I don't know.
Spencer, what's your answer?
If you're gonna judge it, if you're gonna judge it as like a movie that's constructed together or whatever, I mean, I don't know. I can see people making the argument for Platoon, but like, I think, I don't know, they're both successful in my book.
I would go if She's Gotta Have It. It's funnier. It's it's just more aesthetically appeals to what I like.
Sure.
And it's not as oppressive as Platoon can get in certain parts.
Yeah.
And I can handle a lot.
It was like intense. And,
maybe
I would go for She's Gotta Have It. I'm not sure.
There are like some heavy depressing movies I can watch over and over again, but Platoon is one where it's like, nah, if it's like battle scenes and shit and people dying all the time, it's like I can't really do that.
Sure.
I'm just weird. I think I was kind of somewhat raised on like action movies, so yeah, in the sense of I just sort of watched. I guess on that aspect, I don't have the hardest trouble watching awful things in movies at least. I don't know. So.
You're not renting Faces of Death or anything like that? Okay.
I'm not doing that. I'm not going like extreme.
But we'll figure it out, I guess.
I still haven't seen The Painted Bird yet. That I've heard that's like fucking intense.
Yeah, I want to see that. And the kid from Come and See.
Come and See. I would not watch that. If it was like that or She's Gotta Have It. Come and See is an amazing movie. I love it, but it's also just that's a movie that gets to me. Just because it's so fucking focused on that kid's face the entire movie.
Yeah, that means you have a soul and can feel things.
Like that's like a movie where like the violence, it's like there, but it's never, you never once feel like it's ever shot to be. To look nice, and maybe even the same way some of the action in Platoon is.
Yeah, I want to call it action. I'd call this like the pure violence, and like it's a battle.
Yeah,
thing. It's not.
I call it action only because I just consider anything where a physical thing happens to be action. Okay. That's just kind of how I'm phrasing it. But you're right. It's more carnage and violence and suffering sequences rather than action, especially in Come and See. Just when there's going through the mud. That's, you know, no action, but it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah. J-Dog? Which is...
I don't particularly like war movies in the first place, so I'd have to say She's Gotta Have It, which I do actually enjoy a lot, so... That's just my straight-up answer.
But, alright, so, JR, do you have other 1986 movies you would recommend?
1986 movies. I'm gonna look on my IMDb real quick. I checked it a couple of days ago, trying to remember what else from that year I've seen. Admittedly, I'm very behind on 1986. I'm not gonna have the biggest list of movies. So give me a second. It's loading right now. It's like a few things.
Fuck! Another episode. I didn't mention Night of the Creeps. I love that movie. It's such a super fun zombie movie.
Shit, it's like still loading.
What else is there? Joel, do you like Night of the Creeps?
The one time I saw it, I liked it a lot, yeah. That's the most energetic I've ever seen Scott Adkins. And I'm one of the people who doesn't like Halloween
Scott
3.
Adkins?
Not Scott Adkins. what's the name of that actor?
Oh, shit. I can't remember his name now. William? Tom?
Tom Atkins?
Yeah. Yes.
Anyways, Scott Atkins, you know, the action movie star.
That's a different person altogether.
All right. 1986. Okay. Stand By Me, From Beyond, Blue Velvet, True Stories, A Better Tomorrow, Castle in the Sky, Ferris Bueller. I'd say, like, those for me, I guess, are like my top movies from that year
cool.
that I've seen.
Okay.
I don't know, I feel like those are all pretty, most people know, I mean, From Beyond is a cool horror movie. Blue Velvet, everyone knows what Blue Velvet is. I would hope most people know True Stories, the David Byrne movie. That's a lot of fun. And Better Tomorrow, it's the John Woo, Chiang Fat action movie that he did before
Hard Boiled. Is that the one where Chiang Fat is going through the corridor and he's putting guns in pod plants?
Yeah, there's like a part I think where that's like kind of early on. I think there's like a scene where there's like a shootout. I forget it. Yeah, where something like that. It's been a while since I've seen it. So my memory of it isn't the best, but I remember enough to say that it's a pretty great John Woo movie.
Okay. I'm going through Letterboxd and I found there's one of the guinea pig films, which I'm not going to explain what those movies are. Look it up if you're curious. But there's one with the drag performer PETA from Funeral Parade of Roses. I want to see that.
The hell are you talking about?
The guinea pig films?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say guinea pig.
Yeah, and PETA from Funeral Parade of Roses, and he's the fool character in Ron. They're like the jester character who's like, hey, who's hanging out the whole time. Anyway, so where is it?
Here's a movie you shouldn't watch. Okay. It's called 9 1/2 Weeks. And when I was a kid, I remember people talking about how sexy that movie was. And you know what? There's nothing sexy about that movie. I'm sorry. Like, they're having food sex with the fridge open, and they play the most ridiculous, you know, that Motown song that's like, I'm not even, anyways, it's bad. And then there's a part where they like have sex like in an alleyway when it's like pouring rain. And all I could think was like, poor Kim Basinger. Like, this is supposed to be sexy. She's got to be freezing.
Yeah, I mean, for a time it was. But, what was I going to bring up?
Are you okay?
No, I'm not okay. Okay, but wrong year, but we're not going to cover an 87 movie, an 87 movie anytime soon.
All right.
But the movie Yi Ling, or Brightness, it's a African film, I believe it's from Mali, and it's a movie that Scorsese is a big supporter of. And there's a DVD out there, and sometimes on Criterion Channel, it's really good. This like lo-fi, like mystical, like fantasy film, and it plays and it does like magic effects in some really cool, like low budget ways of getting around it.
What was it called?
Yeelen.
Brightness.
And I believe you see a chicken get killed on screen.
Ooh.
But I think that might be it. It's not.
You see one get killed in Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
I mean, you see a chicken get decapitated in Willy Wonka. You don't know if that chicken was alive when they decapitated.
That's my presumption.
If I see it moving around, like, because he says that because I've got a list of movies where you see an actual animal get killed on screen, because I feel like there should be a warning system for people like me who react to that.
I recently watched a movie where that happened and I was not prepared for it.
Yeah, you would think that the MPAA would have some kind of, like, thing for that, but I guess not. They don't have, like, a rated R for live animal violence.
I feel like when it happens in, like, a foreign film, like, there's an African film we talked, is it Tuki Buki that has the,
Tuki Buki.
Has, like, a cow slaughtered on screen, and then later there's a goat that also is killed, like... It's like part of the culture, this would be a thing that you would see and stuff like that. And it's just my American eyes that are like, I don't want to see where my food came from.
Yeah. I mean, I get even that sentiment, though.
Original Friday the 13th, there's a scene where they lift up the bed and they find a snake and they cut that snake in half. And that was a real snake that they just kill.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just a one-second shot or something like that, but still. And this has been Joel's Soapbox.
What do you think of the old boy?
Eating the octopuses, that octopus is also on the list. Somehow that's less disturbing to me. Probably because I'm like, I wonder if that's any good.
Is it because he's eating it?
I also think that the timing of the scene, too, I just think that the way that it's contextualized, I think just sort of makes it work really well. Despite the very unfortunate reality that he was eating a live octopus. Yeah. I think they did it 4 takes, I think I read.
Yeah, but then, like, if it's like Old Boy or Tuki Buki, where there's a context behind it, it's fine. If it's in, like, an Italian exploitation movie, then I'm like, I don't need this in my life.
Yeah.
Sometimes the Japanese exploitation movies tapped into that, too, and it's like, ugh. They learned the wrong lessons from Italy.
Tampopo, which is excellent, but also has... And the turtle scene goes in with the other disturbing scenes. Like, he's trying to unnerve you in that movie sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they eat the turtles. It's about food.
No, I understand. No, I'm saying it's... I think that them killing that turtle is on the same level as the yolk exchange scene, I will call it. Like, it's I have to go.
Jared, you gotta see Tampopo. It's unforgettable.
Oh, no, I've seen Tampopo. It's a great movie. It's so good. Yeah. It's a movie I need to rewatch at some point.
I never thought of oysters as being that sexual before, and now I can't unsee it. So, Jared, you were on for the Five Bloods episode. So, how does Shizuo have it compared to the Five Bloods?
Compared to the Five Bloods,
Can you see his first?
I think you can definitely tell. You can tell that, like, they were made by the same person, in the sense that, like, they both have sort of very, I don't know, is dynamic the right word? In terms of, like, how it's structured, and the way that, like, the flow of the story, despite it being, on the opposite ends of like the spectrum in terms of like subject and tone or tone and stuff. But I guess she's got to have it's a bit scrappier in construction for sure. But you can definitely tell. You can definitely tell that he's like more confident, you know, with the Five Bloods, in terms of just like the scale and the sort of like emotions that he's going for, and the sort of the level of like tension, and the sort of the political side of it as well, being much more explicit. I feel like if you just showed a person like those two movies and you're like, yeah, that's the same director, I think you'd very much you can very much see that this guy had a very amazing career in between those two movies. I guess I don't know if I can say on that regard. I mean, you could probably make the claim that The Five Bloods is probably a better made movie, but like, that's also a movie made by a much more experienced person than She's Gotta Have It. So it's you know, I think considering he was like, you know, and he was like, what, how old was he when he made She's Gotta Have It? Was he like
in his 20s?
Was he like in his early 20s or something? Was he like, all right,
he's like same age as my parents, around the same age as my parents. I think already like
She's Gotta Have It's 1988, 1957. Oh, okay, so he was like, almost 30 or. He was like in his late 20s. All right. So yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm bad at comparing in terms of like quality. I guess I it's hard for me to compare two films from like different, completely different like genres like that, I guess, and scales.
And interesting, you bring up David Byrne, because Spike directed the David Byrne thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's right.
Comes out next month, apparently, I think.
Yeah, it's like a live concert thing. Probably pretty cool.
Yeah. Anyway, so this will come out in 2 to 3 weeks, I think.
Oh, this episode?
Yes. I have to check the calendar. About 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks from now, it'll come out.
Okay, cool.
So, are you going to be on Zebras or any other show in the meantime?
Between now and 2 and 3 weeks? I don't know. I do not have any... as of right now, I have not. No one's asked me to go on there.
Okay.
On their show yet, but you know, we'll see what happens. Right. But but yeah,
J Dog.
Yep.
What's coming out?
I don't know.
For you.
First episode of the Dead Travel Fast should finally be up. I know I've been talking about it for a while, and people have been bothering me about it. Specifically, yeah. Alistair. From the Russell Files Unite podcast. And I'm just saying, lay off! No, I'm just kidding. But I'll have that up. I finally got music to put on it. Right. And the other podcast I'm doing, the Customers Also Watched, should be up there, too. Just follow JDT Movies on Twitter, and I'll have links to all that stuff on there.
Okay. And I haven't mentioned this on the show yet. I always forget to. But former guest Marcus Penn and M2 Magant have music on Bandcamp, as well as Scott Thurow. But I think we talked about that when he was on his album. But M2 Magant also has an album, a couple EPs. Anyway, but music you can buy. And Marcus has a couple albums you can buy on his Bandcamp. And Entombed is Sir Tombs. And Marcus is, I think it's just Marcus. And I think it's something like that. But yeah, they're friends of the show. And if you like music, like hip hop music and like that type of stuff, then check out their stuff.
Yeah, really talented.
LL Scotch is like ambient, like kind of chill music, which is really great. And I hope he makes another album in the future. But yeah, so this and for me, what's coming up by this time? Maybe my grind bin on Street Trash will be out. I don't know. I recorded it back in June, but it'll come out at some point. And Street Trash is on Shudder currently, if you haven't seen it. If you want something stupid and violent and gory, that gets a little rapey and gross in a couple scenes. Mm-hmm. But besides that, if you like kind of gross, stupid horror movies, watch it. Like, if like Blood Rage is your type of movie, then you'd be into it, into this movie.
Sorry, what was it called?
Street Trash.
Street Trash, yeah. Okay.
It's like a trauma movie with better production value.
Okay. Right, so it's like, it's
offensive towards everyone, which is kind of the point.
It's like very, very,
really takes down the tack heads.
Yeah,
it's another New York movie. So, see you guys for Platoon, or by the time this comes out, we will maybe have recorded an episode with Martin Kessler on another African film that Joel, he can send you the file.
Okay. Of.
So don't worry about it. That's it. Jared, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, of course, thanks for having me on, or thanks for inviting me.
And see you guys for either. The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell, and thank you for listening.